Introduce our first speaker. His name is Charles W. Charles.
Hi, group. My name is Charles Maddock.
Hey, Charles.
Hold on for a second. And also, got a stickler for perfection. I had to move my chair. You know, it's good to be here. First, I want to thank the program committee of Host 19 for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. I don't take being asked to share my experience, strength, and hope lightly. I honor it as a commitment and pleased that I'm here and able to talk about these three traditions tonight. Just going to give you a little bit about my story because I feel like I need to tell everybody where I came from. And the reason I feel that that's necessary, and so maybe you could relate to kind of like my journey, and you can kind of see how my journey has played a part in me becoming familiar with the traditions and how the traditions I apply them in my life, and then give some examples of how Narcotics Anonymous groups applied. You know, I come from one of those families, you know, that everybody used, but nobody had a problem, you know. And for the life of me, I can only tell you this, you know, out of seven people who I thought used just as regularly as I did, I'm the only one with the problem. And so what I understand today, it doesn't matter what birth order I fell in, whether I was middle class, upper class, lower class, you know, no class, some class, that I'm an addict by somewhere in there, God's divine intervention. He saw fit that this was where I needed to be so I could get to a point in my life that I can help somebody by trying to carry the message. And a part of, you know, big deal in my household was education and, you know, working from your bootstraps and you know, and be better than and, you know, carry on the tradition. And so that's a lot of what I grew up with. You know, you got to go do this. You know, you got to be more successful than I was, you know, and more successful than your grandfather. So a lot of what I got was I was driven into being, well, I call it perfection, you know, driven into perfection, driven into if you make a mistake, just own up to it. It's easier that way, you know. So that's what I spent a lot of my childhood just taking responsibility for stuff. And what I understand today is, and this has nothing to do with dysfunctional household. This is just part of my story, is a dysfunctional household. Going through that process of a dysfunctional household, stuff became mine even when it wasn't mine. But it was mine anyway. And I needed to learn how just to own up to it real fast, you know, and take it. And so part of me growing into adulthood, I took on a lot of responsibility, a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of remorse for things that was supposed to be my fault. And what happened was one day I saw some other people doing things that, you know, I was always taught, you know, you don't need to do that, even though everybody using that, but you don't need to go there, you know. And one day I went there, and I remember going there real vividly at the age of 15 and making a decision at 15 years old that I want to do this every day. You know, I want to get high, I want to use every day. I like the way I feel. And the way it made me feel was, the heck with the guilt, the heck with the remorse, the heck with the shame. When I'm high, I don't feel like that no more. I don't feel like it's my fault no more, you know. And I found a voice in that, you know. So, you know, off I went, you know, and like a good addict, as long as I'm under your roof and you can watch me and we can watch each other, I'll do what you ask me to do. But as soon as I get out your eyesight, I'm going to do my thing. And my escape from my parents was graduating from high school, going on to college. I kind of did my thing, and it became very clear in my grades that I was doing my own thing. And heck with the fact that my parents was, you know, at that time were putting three kids through school, I'm going to do my thing, you know what I mean? And it's not important that I reach that, because the more you use, the less important stuff become, you know? The less important it became for me to, you know, to achieve and to strive and to be the best and all that stuff, it just wasn't important no more. And what happened was I end up, you know, not being able to intercept one of them report cards home from the college. And when they found it, they were like, well, that's it, buddy. You know, we're not paying for this, you know. And so I made a real quick decision. You know, I said, well, that's okay. I'll sign up for the military. And what happened was, and what I can look back and see now, but I couldn't see then, I knew I couldn't make it on my own. And I knew I needed something or someone to help me out. And if it wasn't going to be my parents, it'd be the, you know, the government. And I just choose to use the military. And plus, when I went in, they wasn't checking your urine. So You know, it was real clear getting in the door wasn't going to be the problem, you know, at that time. And, you know, so I enlisted. And what they allowed me to do was to keep doing what I wanted to do, and they just kept taking care of me. They gave me a place to sleep. They told me I could walk down there and get and eat whenever I got ready. And that's what I did, you know, and they paid me for it, you know, doing what they asked me to do as long as they could watch me. And I was all right with that. And I did that for a while, and, of course, you know, I couldn't see a career doing that, you know, because I needed some more freedom to do some more of what I wanted to do. So I found me somebody who thought that it was okay if me and them got together. And the relationship kind of went like this. I knew him for a year. I went away for 3 years. And then I wrote him some letters talking about, you know, I love you. And they said, I love you too. And I said, well, when I get out, can we, you know, get married and all? They was like, sure. So I said, well, instead of me doing that, I'll get married to you before, because the government said I'll get an extra piece of change in my check if I do that. They said, okay. So I got married. I got some extra change and wasn't living with nobody, you know, but they gave it to me anyway. And then I got out and I moved where she was, you know, and then that became my next person to take care of me. But it's something that goes on in my life that goes like this. If I have to participate or be responsible for any part of the taking care of me, then I got a say in what goes on. And so my say was, okay, well, if you want me to work and you want me to pay bills and you want me to be somewhat responsible, then I can choose when I want to come home. I can choose what part of the bill I'm going to pay, if any, because, you know, at the end I wasn't even doing that. What I choose to do is my business. What you choose to do is my business. You know, all that stuff kind of came together. And, you know, the situation ended up being what it was, you know. Addict in full bloom trying to run something. And that don't work, you know. It just don't work, you know. So what happened was, as a result of the never-ending spiral of getting to the end of the road, one day after, you know, and I've been blessed, man, got a job in computers, you know, all this stuff, right? When I got back home one day after my ex-wife had to file a missing person report, because didn't nobody know where I was, she said, you got to go. And she packed all my stuff. She said, you can have this, you know, you can get your Army duffel bag. You can get and I bought you a 5-pack of 20-gallon Glad bags. Don't take no luggage. Matter of fact, don't take any valuables in there, because she said they're all mine. She said, we got two cars, you know, the nice one and the hoopty. You get the hoopty, and you got to go, you know, you got to roll. And what happened was one of my using parents called me up and said something about going over to a hospital and getting some help. And, of course, at that time, I was hearing it, but I wasn't listening, you know. And I was like, okay. And, of course, all of the mess that comes along with being put out your own place, you can imagine. Her brother had to come. Her father was outside parked in the car. You know, all the threatening stuff, man. Don't make a move. We're going to come and get you. And, you know, all that had to go on. And so they ended up leaving me in the place. They said, well, we're going to let you stay here for the night, but tomorrow you need, like, it was my eviction process. You know, in the morning you just need to be gone, Slim. And I was all right with it. But it's something about the end. It's something about the end where it went like this for me. After going to the hospital, and they asked me, I call them the no, yes, yes, no questions. Some people call them assessments. I call them no, yes, yes, no. And so when you asked me, it didn't matter what you asked me, how you asked me. In my mind, it was no, yes, yes, no. It didn't matter what the question was. Are you alive? No. You know, were you born? No. Do you use yes? I mean, that's the way it went. And so the lady asked me, you know, did I want some help? And I said, no. I said, if I, you know, I just got this relationship issue going. And she said, okay. Well, we give you some Valium and some. And I said, hey, you know, in back of my mind, I was just ways and means to get more, lie to the doctor, you know. And I knew how to do that too. And something happened, though. After I left, and of course, I got beat my parents. They gave me a check, a blank check. I say I beat my parents because, for real, I knew I was going to write it for more than. Y'all remember them, some of y'all, when you used to have a giant card and you could write for over? And they didn't have that machine to check your checking account. And I took my father's. I had his. He didn't know I had a copy of it. And he gave me a check that he thought that I was just going to take to the pharmacy. And, of course, I took the check and wrote it for over. And I went and got something to wash down all this medicine with. You know, I can't take the medicine with nothing to drink behind it, you know. And my parents put me in the basement because, you know, it's funny. I never heard my parents or an addict say when they got to the end, their parents say you can stay up in the master bedroom or the guest room. It's always the basement, or you can sit out on the porch or come around to the back and you can sleep in the car. It's never in the house, any place respectable. It's always the basement. So I got the basement. And in the midst of me using, because I had started using in their basement, it became clear that I could not go on like that, and I could not live without that. So I made a decision to take the rest of those pills and take my own life. That was the decision I made. And all I remember was I passed out, and when I came to, the desire to use was gone. And the lady at my job who used to come up to me and tell me her story, and I would do stuff like, eh, you know, like a Family Feud was big at that time. So when she would open her mouth, I go, eh, you know, I don't want to hear no more of your story now. That's the lady I came back to and said, can you tell me about them people you, because she never said N-A nothing. She just told me her story, and she said, I go talk to some people. She didn't even say a meeting. She said, I talked to some people at 12 o'clock. We go down the street and up the street. She never even said location. So when I came back, I asked her. She said, well, I'm going down the street. Do you want to go? I said, well, can I go with you? And she said, yeah. She invited me. And that was my first meeting. It was the steps to the courthouse. This was actually in the courthouse. And some of you all may know Doreen P. Some of you may not. It was a very small meeting. And that was January 18th, 1988. And I've been here ever since. The way that I got my sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous at that time was, and some of y'all can relate, and some of y'all can't relate. They asked me, did I have one? I said, no. They said, Mike is it. And I said, okay. That's how I got my sponsor. And what he did was he didn't give me a whole bunch of literature. He didn't pile it on. He just told me his story and said, keep coming back. And one day, as I was going absolutely insane with about 3.5 months clean or 4.5 months clean, it ain't clear because that's how clogged the mission statement was. I said something, what's up with these steps? And he said, well, what do you want to know? He said, well, I hear everybody talking about doing steps. Can I do something? He said, okay, start with step one. And he sat me down and he broke down the steps to me in order. And he worked with me through them. So not only did I know what the step was about, but I would work through the step and get some experience doing what the step said do, simply put. And when I had got to the end of the steps after 5 years, my sponsor said to me, there are 12 more principles in your life that you need to apply, because just like you're finding freedom for the individual in the steps, now learn how the group finds its freedom through the traditions. And that's where he took me. He took me on that journey so I could better understand what the principles were and how the groups found freedom through the traditions. The seventh tradition talks about that we are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. There's a lot of information in the basic text, and there's a lot of information in the steps, works how and why. What I'm going to share with you is my experience and the principle I found behind it. The main principle I find behind the seventh tradition is responsibility. We need to learn how to be responsible for ourselves as addicts. This convention got put on because of the basket that goes around in the groups when you go to your meetings in whatever areas or regions you come from. That money has gone into making these events possible. The money has also gone to pay rent in those facilities that you go to. They pay for the pamphlets that you look at. They pay for a lot of stuff. Because part of why we are here is to carry the message. The money from this convention, money from all kind of events go to the world. But I just want to let you know, all the money that we use, nobody loaned it to NA. We didn't get a bank loan. We didn't buy some property, invest in it, and sold it. We didn't do that. We got it through the donations, and the responsibility of the world is to make sure that that money goes back out to do what it needs to do. That's the whole point behind the seventh tradition. But now I'm going to share something with you that I thought was interesting because some of y'all might be able to relate to this. Have you ever gone to an anniversary where the person had a pastor come or their mama come, their cousin them come, they had a singing group come, they had a family from down the road them come or up the road them come, cousin them come, they 14 children come and they grandchildren come? Y'all ever had that experience? They ain't addicts, but they come. They want to come and they want to tell you, I remember that time Johnny came in the room and stole my pocketbook. And they do that, right? We do that. We have anniversaries like that. So what I want to share with you about the seventh tradition is, when the basket goes around, do we take their money? Now, I'm going to share, because I do a little homework before I come to lead on something. I try to go out and get some more information. So I shared with somebody. I said, well, my friend, I ain't going to break his anonymity. I said, what would you do? And they said, well, we don't actually go in the basket and split their cash up. You know what I mean? If it's in there, it's in there. We taking it, you know. I said, and they said, well, I think we should be doing this, but see, we don't go in and actually break that down and do this and do that. And I said, okay. So I asked another addict, and they said kind of like the same thing. Well, see, they can give, but we just tell them when we make the announcement that we're fully self-supporting. If they choose to put it in the basket, that's on them. And I said, that's good. And, of course, y'all know what I did. I referred back to the literature. And I think the easiest, simplest explanation is in the basic text. Under the seven traditions, it says we do not accept gifts or contributions if you are not a member of Narcotics Anonymous. It's that simple. We shouldn't even give them the basket. We should say, hold up, Boo Boo Jane. Don't put no money in here. Let it go around you. Okay? Don't put it in. That's the way we should be. That's the way we should function. And the reason I'm saying it is because I see it in a lot of groups. And I can only tell you about my group. I see our group and people come and we have said, please don't come. And somebody actually takes the basket around them folk and go give it to addicts and let addicts make the contribution. We do that because we understand that we need to take care of ourselves. It's no longer us going on a free ride. We have to be able to take care of ourselves. If we don't learn the principle of responsibility, who is going to teach it for us? No group can exist on one person. It is impossible. I've seen people try to be, I've been the group treasurer for 15 years. You can't take it from me. I've seen it. I've seen people, and not too long ago, I've witnessed somebody physically have to be restrained because they wanted to be in charge of something. They couldn't be in charge no more because it wasn't the conscience of the group. And the person had really taken hold of something and said, no, this is what I want to do. And we simply had to say, that's not how it works. It's not how it works. The eighth tradition talks about us being non-professional, but we may employ special workers. NA does not have a training program for people to be accountants, store clerks, cashiers, lawyers. We don't do that. We don't have that. So when we say non-professional, that means we're not asking any addict to go down some kind of professional track to be anything that our fellowship needs. What we do is we hire special workers. So some people say, well, what's a special worker? Our service centers, where we buy some of our literature, we hire a manager to manage the service center, and that manager is responsible for making sure he has the proper amount of people who are cashiers, and we pay the manager. And we pay the people who run the cashiers, because that's a real job description. There's no such a thing as no job description. Plus, how many addicts can go to work from, you know, 9 to 5 working at the service center, taking money without having a job? That's kind of risky. So we, you know what I mean? That's a little risky. So what we do is we hire professionals. We do it for an abundant number of reasons. We do it because we're allowing somebody else to do it and making it their responsibility, and the fellowship sees that we need to have this function taken care of. Taxes for some regions, some service committees, some boards need to be filled out. And if there's no tax professional on that board or committee, somebody got to fill it out. Because, you know, in spite of what the IRS says about nonprofit tax numbers, they want a nonprofit tax return. And Mr. Nobody is not filling it out. Somebody physically have to fill it out. We audit. We hire accounting firms to audit the proceeds that come in through the cash registers at service centers or these special workers. We audit that, and the reason we audit is to make sure that the what came in is really what came in, and take action against those who are doing whatever it is that they don't need to be doing. You know, that's the whole point behind the ACE tradition. It tells us that we have the authority to do that. It's our right to do that. When we put money in the basket, decisions are made at other levels that say whether or not it makes prudent sense to spend the money to do these things. And how do we make those motions and things of that nature? Your GSR goes to your area. He gets the information and should take it back to the group. That's as simple. That's how you would find out from your GSRs. And the motions would get passed and voted on because of the work that they do to get to these particular areas or regional meetings to make sure that things are being conducted with the best conscience of the groups being taken into account. And the ninth tradition talks about us having special boards or committees responsible to those they serve. I'm going to give you the real simple answer. If whatever's going on in the eighth tradition, if it's incorporated, then you have a board comes out of the ninth tradition. If what goes on in the eighth tradition is not incorporated, then you have a committee in the ninth tradition. That's what they are. And those committees are responsible for the activities going on for these special workers. As simple as that. This region has a convention. Okay? The region is made up of a group or a committee called a host. Host, whatever. This one is Host 19. Host 19 needs to spend the money. The region has said that the board, which is in Chesapeake Potomac Regional Board, is responsible for the financial transactions of the region. So that committee comes to the board. The committee has an individual who's the board president, who's the host body president, that comes to the board to make the decisions on this is what we want to do, and the board approves or does not approve or makes suggestions back to that person who takes it back to their committee. That's the ninth tradition at work. People have had to get quotes from vendors, musicians, truck companies, cash register maintenance, and have had the person who's the president of that host has had to take that to the board to get the okay for the board to write a check to that organization. And so we can be accountable and have a convention today. The same committee is the same committee every 5 years or the last 3 years ago now who brought to the board a proposal from the city of Ocean City to rent this convention center for the next 5 years. It was that host's responsibility. It is that host's responsibility 2 years from now to go out and get the same contract and bring it back to the board. And before that can even get voted on, if the group, if the area or the region doesn't want that to happen anymore, the information goes back down to the groups. The groups bring the conscience through the GSR to their area, and that area brings it to the region, and that region gives the advisement to the board to say whether or not we want to do it in Ocean City anymore. So, and the reason I'm sharing that is I think a lot of people see things happen, and they just don't know how it happened. We think everybody that dope fiend it. I don't know, they dope fiend it, man. How did he get to be the man? They pay for his room and plane ticket. They dope fiend it. You know, that's not what happens. People who are picked to speak go in front of a committee. That committee goes back to that host, and that host brings it to the board to say, these are the people we picking, and we need airfare for each one of these folks on the list. That's how it happens. That's how it happens. So a lot of decisions we think, and it talks about in the tradition, and I'm going to shut up after this, it really comes from the group. The group has the ability to make the difference. And that's why the tradition says freedom comes to the group through these traditions. My name is Charles, and I'd like to thank you all for letting me share. And I'm going to keep coming back.
Thank you for sharing, Charles. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Jeffrey B. South Potomac.
Hi, family. My name is Jeffrey, and I'm an addict. And it's always an honor for me to be asked to share my experience, Jeff, and hope for the program, Narcotics Anonymous. I seem like I remember us doing this together once before, I think, on the traditions. And I'm kind of like a backup man for the last 3 years. If somebody don't show up, you know, to do a meeting, then they'll go, Jeff, get Jeff. He could do it, you know. And they say, Jeff, we need you to share in 5 minutes, you know. So, you know, I immediately have to go into my prayer mode, you know, and because I don't I never say no, you know, because that's not the way I was taught. You know, I don't want to lose it, so I don't mind giving it back, you know. as if I had planned, you know, yeah, I would like to, you know, do research and study, you know, the topic, you know. But I've been here for a while, and so I actually have experience with the traditions. You know, I've been a service junkie since I've been here. My clean date is 6/29/93, and it's one of the hottest summers on record. And I remember just before coming into Narcotics Anonymous how I was still trying to get high, and I couldn't stop sweating. I got high in the woods, and I used I ain't trying to get nobody high, but I used an ash bowl. One that I made that was about this short, so the sweat couldn't fall off my head without falling into the bowl. So it was real hard for me to get that hit, you know, because I, you know, kept sweating between the matches getting wet, you know what I mean? It was just rough, you know. And so, you know, but that's not why I stopped. So, you know, God saw fit to bring me in, you know. As a result of him bringing me to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I found a way out of that pain and misery that I was in. You know, traditions, we had traditions in the alley, you know, that we lived by, you know, codes, you know, like one was hustle or be hustled, you know. Never let them see you sweat, you know. Never give a sucker even break, you know. And here's one. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Now, I still don't know what that means. But I tried to live by it, you know. You know, for a long time, you know. And you know, so coming here and being introduced to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I got introduced to the traditions. It wasn't a thing where my sponsor deliberately set me down and we went over the tradition. It was kind of like through trial and error. You know, as I said, I was a service junkie. I remember my first service position was a coffee maker. And I remember the coffee maker, they gave me the key, you know, and I was a newcomer, and gave me the key, and I used to get there early, cut that pot on, you know what I mean, set that coffee out, you know, put them cups up and make sure I got tea, you know, make sure I got sugar, cream, you know, and you got to have a spoon. Put in a cup, you know, waiting on them, you know, and I stand back and I watch people as they came in to get that coffee, you know. And a lot of times, another newcomer, they used the early the meetings, you know, so they thought I knew something, you know. They come in, you know, they ask me questions. I say, yeah, sit up front, you know. You got to get your sponsor, you know, stuff like that. So, I felt a part of, you know, because I never would participate in anything that would go on with me if it wasn't dope related, you know. So in order for me to begin to participate in my life in recovery was something new for me, you know, and that was one of the first acts that I did. I spent a lot of time trying not to be a sucker, you know, so I wouldn't do sucker things, you know. You know, and a sucker thing definitely was trying to help somebody, right. You know, do something for somebody, you know, actually can what happened to somebody else. You know what I mean? It just didn't fit well with the environment that I came up in. So here I am now, I'm the coffee man, you know, and I'm genuinely sincerely want to help somebody, you know, and be good at that position with what I do. And so, you know, and so my service work began to evolve into chair position, secretary, you know, a group, you know, and I was a treasurer before. I think I did every service position on the group level except for GSR. Although being a chairperson, I would have to go sit in at the area, you know, when the GSR wasn't there. So I kind of did that too, you know. And so as a result of me being in those positions, people would tell me when I was violating a tradition. You know, so they would tell me that I was violating, and me being who I am, you know, I don't want you to have nothing up on me, so I would go study the literature, you know. So that way, the next time you approach me with what I'm violating with, I had something to fight back with, you know. It wasn't because I was all that interested in, you know, being an informed member. I just wanted to have something to back you up off of me with, you know, and I go to my sponsor and I get that information from him, you know. And so what he did was he kind of explained it to me as I went, how, because we would have business meetings and I would be, seemed like controversy in business meetings, you know, at the group level, you know. And for the most part, I had to come to understand that the group is more important than me, you know, that you guys can have a meeting without me, but I can't have a meeting without y'all, although I try, you know, but I find myself, you know, asking and answering the questions, you know what I mean, and that don't work out too good. You know, so I had to come to understand, you know, that our common welfare being the group should come first, you know, that my personal recovery depends on in that unity, that we all need to get together on what's going on, that our diversity is our strength. And I had to learn that as a result, because I put everybody in categories. It was different types of people. You know, you had your suckers, you know, you had your bammers, you had your squares, you know, you know. And I put everybody in a box when I met them. So I never would allow nobody to be who they was. And I would only accept information from people that was just like me. You know, it was hard for me to accept information from somebody that was different from me. You know, when I got with that first tradition and I understood that my own personal welfare, my own personal recovery depended on me being open enough to allow people to be who they was, and that's where the strength of the program came from, with everybody being different. So I came to accept that. Now, of course, I've done step work that also helped me to get to that point in my recovery. You know, I always, you know, want to know who in charge, even in the street. You know, I didn't want to deal with the runners, you know. I want to, well, who the man, you know. You know what I mean? I want to know who I'm asking to let me go with this $10, you know. Who I give my short money to, you know. I know you can't take it, you know. So I want to know who in charge, you know. So I came in here with that, you know, and so the second tradition kind of told me who was in charge. Nobody, you know, our higher powers is in charge, you know. What I got to do to be a part of this thing that's going on? How can I get to live like you people, you know? Well, the only requirement is a desire that you want to live like us, that you want to be a member, you know, and they used to have the word honest in there. You had to have an honest desire, but the thing was they couldn't determine how honest you was, who was honest and who wasn't, you know what I mean? And so they came to the conclusion that me just being here is desire enough that I want to stay clean, you know. So, okay, so what are we going to do? What kind of group we going to have, you know? So it says that we can have different types of groups, that there's no one particular way to recover, that we all recover in different degrees, you know. And so it says that each group should be autonomous, you know, except in matters that affect other groups or NA as a whole. Now, I had to look up the word autonomy. And so I came to find out that autonomy means self-governing. So that means that each group is self-governing. So what happens is, then as a group, we have to decide what kind of meeting we're going to have. And the book talks about, the local guide to services says that we should ask ourselves some questions, such as what type of people come to our meetings? You know, what type of community is it that we're in? You know, who we actually trying to serve and provide this service for? These should all be taken under consideration when we decide on what type of meeting to have. You know, there's no need in having a speaker's meeting or a 12 tradition meeting when ain't nobody come to the meeting but newcomers. They're going to miss the boat. You know, and so we might lose a lot of people. So we need to consider the type of meetings that we're going to have. And then once we decide to have it, it's saying that it's okay as long as it don't affect NA or other groups as a whole. Meaning that, and we got traditions that tell us how to govern the meetings, you know. So solid. We got these meeting people coming, you know, God in charge, you know, everybody's more important than me, you know what I mean? So why are we doing this? You know what I mean? What's the primary purpose? They gave us a primary purpose. Primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Now, that could be old people or new people. Yeah, when I say old people, I mean people that's been here for a while, you know, old-timer, you know, I don't know what the correct word is to say, you know, protege, you know, I mean, predecessor, yeah. Protege is the new guy, predecessor is the old guy. Okay, so either or, what the purpose is, the primary purpose for us is to carry the message to the person who still suffers, the addict who still suffers, you know. And then, so what is our message? It gave us a message. The message is hope. But it also says that any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Good Google Moog. That's powerful, ain't it? That's strong, man. Before I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't know. I didn't know, man. The best I knew was that I had to kick. Yeah. That's all I knew, you know. I said, boy, Smoke, you got a problem, man. I said, man, yeah, I got a habit, man. I need to kick. And I would go home and I kicked the whole lot. Yeah. Really. I go through all the stuff that kicking do. I don't know if y'all ever kicked before. But I went home and I'd be hot and cold and sweating and chilling, you know what I mean? Fighting and snotting, you know, blowing my wife up. Woo! Could Google Moogle, you know. But I'm kicking and I would endure that. Yes, sir. You know, for 3 days. But then after the 3 days, I'd go back up on the hill.
Yeah.
And they say, where you been, Smoke? Man, I've been kicking. You know. So I kicked a whole lot of times. But I didn't know how to stay stopped. You know what I mean? In my mind, I believed that everybody used. You know, that everybody did something. You know, that a person that actually lived like I'm living there, something was wrong with them. You know, and I didn't want to have nothing to do with it. You know. So the program with the fifth tradition gives me a new way to live, you know. And so the sixth tradition talks about how we shouldn't have, he mentioned it, how some groups will have the pastor come in or Grandma Jane come and share, you know, and this and that, you know. It talks about not lending the name or endorsing any outside facilities, meaning that the preacher shouldn't come in and tell us how to get clean, you know. The therapeutic value of this program is one addict helping another, you know. And so when we do that, we don't confuse people. See, because the thing is that this program will work for anybody. You don't have to be Christian for this program to work. You don't have to be Jewish or Catholic or Buddhist or Muslim for this program to work for all of us. everybody, you see. So we don't endorse nothing or nobody. The only thing that we're willing to stake our name on, that's further there, is the fact that the program worked. You know, okay, so when we don't do that, then we keep out the controversy, you know. So now we get down to, now me, before I got here, I'm the type of person always wanted something for nothing. And I look for a sale, you know. I want the easier, softer way. I want the rewards, you know, of hard work without the work.
Yeah,
you know. And I prided myself on being able to find that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? They used to say, get over.
Yeah.
That was me. I was a get over artist. You know? And so, you know, coming here, the premise of even the suggestion of being self-supporting was just, it went over my head. It was just too much for me.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me I got to pay my own way? You know, even for a bag of dope, I never brought all the money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If it was a 50 or 50, you know what I mean? I thought I'm doing good giving you 45.
Yeah.
You know, for real, if I could, I'm going to give you 42.
Yeah.
You know, so now you're talking about paying your fair share, you know, bringing it all to the table. You know, that's something different. That's totally new for me. You know what I mean? And then not only would I bring my fair share, pay my own way, I got to be willing to, if you can't pay yours, pull you up too. And don't even worry about it. You need a ride? Yeah, I'll take you there. You know, even though it ain't going my way. You know, that's new for me. That didn't make sense. The only way to keep it is to give it away. Shit, if I give it away, I ain't gonna have it. You know what I mean? So, all this was kind of new for me, you know. So, I got with that, you know. I started paying my way. I started feeling good about it. I didn't worry about what they was doing with it, you know what I mean? Because that's what I do when I go to church. They pass the basket around. I put my dollar in. And yeah. Then I get mad because the pastor got gators on.
Yeah.
Oh, I go outside, you know, and I see he driving a nice, pretty car. Yeah. So what I do? I ain't putting no more dollars in that motherfucker. You know. See, so I don't worry about that here in Nakasa. But they got a pamphlet to tell us what the basket is for. You understand? And because we are self-supporting, and because of what the program has done for me and countless other people, I don't mind contributing because I want the program to be here for the addicts to come behind me, you know. And so that's the thing. See, now, when I first came, all I thought was that I go in the meeting that's supposed to be set up. They supposed to have literature. If I want to read something, it's supposed to be there. The coffee's supposed to be made. You know, but somebody got to pay for that stuff. Somebody got to set the chairs up, you know. Somebody got to go shopping for that stuff, you know. And all that come from the basket being passed around. The basket does a lot more than that, too. Charles alluded to it, the fact that it starts off at the group. Then from the group it goes to the area. The area is where all the groups in your region, wherever your region is, meets on a monthly basis to kind of trade notes. And what we do is send a person from each group, the GSR that I talked about, is a liaison between the group and the area. So what they do is they keep us posted about what's going on at the area. And then what happens, the area, which is representative of all the groups in your region, has a group representative. They call him something else. What they call him, Ronald?
RCM.
The RCM takes and leaves that particular meeting and goes to a regional meeting, which is a meeting that consists of all the areas in that particular region. Okay? So they meet like every 2 months. And what happens is that region, like this is the Chesapeake and Potomac region that's putting on this convention. And Charles alluded to the BOD. The BOD, they handle the purse strings, the money strings. So it's called, Board of Directors. And the person, the host committee, which y'all will see tonight, who the chairperson was, if you go to the main meeting, was of this convention. He has to go sit in on the BOD and tell them what he need money for. And they're not just going to take his word for it. He got to have paperwork, to go along with it. Actually, he has to have a contract to go along with the request that he's making, And so what that directly gets into what the checks are for, which would be special workers. We do have special workers, like Charles, he alluded to, the fact that we have a service center. A service center is a place where we have literature, all the literature, the IP pamphlets, the books, we have a place, a stable place where in Baltimore, I know it was in Baltimore, I don't know where it is now, we go to Baltimore to buy that kind of stuff and bring back. And that guy that works in there, naturally I would do it. I'd volunteer. You wouldn't have to pay me nothing. But, as soon as I got tired, I wasn't going to go in.
Right.
And if I felt like, shit, I've been here all day, I'm gone. I'm going to leave, So, because you ain't paying me nothing. So what they did was they understood that it would be people that volunteer to do all. We got people in here that could do everything that we pay to do, but we get better work if we pay for it.
Right.
We can hold people accountable. If we pay to have that particular job done. Like the guy that's doing when we go down there tonight, we had to pay him, the tape man. Well, not actually him. He probably getting paid by his boss. But they had to sign a contract to do that, And he is a special worker, even though I don't know whether he's in the program or not, but they have to answer to us. And what they do is they have to answer to the traditions. That's how we govern them, okay? And the committees that's done in the ninth tradition is the committee that picked him to be the tape man. We had a special committee. This particular committee that I'm talking about now is the convention committee, which consists of an administrative host committee, which is the chairperson, vice chair, treasurer, secretary. Then outside of that administrative committee, you have special needs committee, entertainment committee, information committee, help me out, programming committee, hotels and hospitality committee, entertainment, and who else? And merchandise, and let's not forget arts and graphics.
Right.
Awesome graph. What happened was that logo that y'all saw pulled down last night, what that was a committee got together and accepted thoughts or ideas for that image. And they told them what they wanted. And that image was an idea of an attic. And we voted on it, or they voted on it. And then we hired somebody to make that image come to pass. And that's what we saw was the finished work of a thought that came from a committee that voted. And that's pretty much how much time I got there. Okay, all right, we're doing good. Got 5 minutes left. Okay, we're going to open it up, though. Okay, so that's pretty much my experience on 7897. 7897, I got to be willing to pay my way, and be responsible. And it don't necessarily mean that I have to give up money. Just being there is a contribution for some addicts. If I see a cup on the floor, then I pick it up. If I see some work that needs to be done, if I'm sitting at a meeting and I see that it needs to get started, I don't sit there and just let the meeting be late. I know it's supposed to start at 7, and it's 7 o'clock, and ain't nobody up there. So I don't just sit there and say, well, I'm going to wait, too. Now, you know the newcomers in there, they don't know what to do. They like, shit, I came to a meeting. I'm going to be here, you know. So it takes an informed member to be able to step up to the plate and get the job done. Now, this is what I want to share with y'all. I don't want to scare nobody. But it would behoove you to become an informed member and interested in the program that you are involved in. Because what's going to happen is you're going to find yourself in a meeting one day, and you're going to be the one in there with the most time. Mm-hmm. Good Google move. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be looking to you. Mm-hmm. What should we do? You know. And so, and anybody can do the things that can be done in order to have a meeting. You know, you just got to be willing, you know, and have that desire, you know. So I've been pretty fortunate that I've been in an area that's service oriented, you know, and I try to encourage everybody that I'm involved with to get in service. Service has been good to me. You know, it's kept me clean. So I want to thank y'all for listening, and thank y'all for having me share.
Thank you, Jeff.